Big D Entertainment presents the Dave Holly Hour. Brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions. He's a variety entertainer, a former broadcaster and columnist, a true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Hello, everybody. It is so great to have you listening to episode 49 of the Dave Holly Hour. Oh, my goodness gracious. We are so close to a one-year anniversary. We've got a big announcement about it coming up in our honorable mention today. All right. So, next week's number 50. The 51st episode is actually going to be the one where we celebrate the first-year anniversary. First-year anniversary technically is the 10th, but this comes out on the Thursday. Not just the Thursday. Well, yes, it is the Thursday, because Thursday is weekend eve, and it's just such a big part of my life. I really like to always get out there and get a good start to a weekend. That's why I decided a year ago that this program would come out on Thursdays. We can subtitle it Weekend Eve plenty of times, that is for sure. Anywho, coming up today, well, first of all, here's to you. And here's to me as well for, almost a year, okay? And you know what I'm toasting with if you're a regular listener. If not, you become a regular listener, you'll understand. I have yet another glass of Jasper Newton. Jasper Newton, the real first and middle name of Mr. Jack Daniels, and Diet Coke with a lime. Mixed together, it's perfect. Oh, I love these glasses where I can put the big rocks in them, too. So good. Okay. Well, since our last chat a week ago, I took something off the bucket list. That's right. I did stand-up. I've done improv comedy, quite a bit of improv comedy, but I went to an open mic, wasn't planning on doing it. And then our friend Zach Dresch, who did that wonderful intro and does the outro and a few other things for this show, Zach was the one that was hosting the open mic. And a few minutes before it was starting, he said, "So, we still have room for a couple more comics if you'd like to be in." And he looks at me and goes, "Dave?" And I'm like, no. Then as the show started, after the first comic performed, I thought, you know what? I could probably do it tonight. If Zach walks by the table, I'll ask him if I can still get in. Zach kept walking on the other side of the table. And so I'm like, okay, there's a sign, huh? Well, and then finally Zach sits just a few feet behind me, and I turn around and I say, "Got room for one more?" He says, "We'll make it." Well, here's what's so great about the way the comedy can work at an open mic, because you're going to have somebody getting up there for the first time, like myself, but you're also going to have some pretty seasoned vets trying out some new things. So, first of all, today's guest, Dan Bublitz, was about the third or fourth comic to perform and so forth. And then when we start getting into this, and Zach now has me on the docket, I find out Skylar Bulks will be performing right before me. In case you are unaware, Skylar not only does comedy, but he's one of the owners out at Boss's Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. Yeah, put a little pressure on a guy getting up there for the first time. Surprisingly, it went extremely well. I was pleased with it, but, it was still the first time. There were a lot of interesting things I found out by doing it, but I can check that off the bucket list. Will I do it again? Probably at some point down the line, but it's not one of those things where I'm going to be going, "Oh, hey, there's an open mic tonight, hon. We better go so I can perform." It's not going to be one of those, but if I get to one, might jump up and do it again. In the meantime, Speaking of Dan, speaking of Zach, they, and speaking of Boss's Comedy Club, Zach and Dan did a clean comedy show last Saturday night as Dan is getting prepared to be on Dry Bar. He has to get a show down to 25 minutes or less. Well, 20 to 25 is the parameter they gave him. You'll learn more about that coming up when we have our conversation with Dan coming up in just a little bit. Dan is also happy to know that from his last appearance on the show, my wife, Miss Carrie's, said, "You've got to save a sound effect of his giggle." So there it is. And he now thinks that he's truly made it because he has made my sound effect folder. So there you go. But we're going to have a great time with Mr. Bublitz anyway, his giggle or not. But I don't know if the man cannot giggle. All right. You know what it's time for? Again, regular listeners, you know. But if a first-time listener, each week, we give a special shout-out for something that's made me happy, made me laugh, made me guffaw, slap my knee silly, or just go, huh, or wow. Well, it's called
Honorable Mention.
So this week, big announcement for you. The honorable mention goes out to my dear friend, and as she likes to refer to herself as my show wife, as in not, you know, like a trophy wife, but the one that I'm in a lot of shows with. She and I have a little thing called the Vaudies, modern day vaudeville. It's a variety show. We haven't done it in a few years because of health issues for both of us. We are back, and it's going to be part of the first anniversary celebration. It's Vaudies Female Review coming up at Books and Brews Thursday, October 8th in the speakeasy part. Tickets will only be $10, and you're going to be entertained for an hour to an hour and a half, and there's going to be some music, there will be some comedy, and there will be some Vaudies After Dark dancers. Wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge. Don't worry, it's all legal, people. Okay? Then again, that'll be in the speakeasy part. I'll tell you how to get tickets on the Dave Holly Hour Facebook page, and we'll get to that in a bit. But looking forward to this. So thank you, Jenny Mack, that your body is and conditions are healing, and my surgeries, et cetera, seem to be over, so we can get back on track. And again, this will be in celebration of the first anniversary of the Dave Holly Hour, and it's going to be an all-female cast except for me. Jenny and I are the co-hosts. We are the co-producers. We look forward to seeing you at Books and Brews Thursday, October 8th at 8 p.m. Okay. Once more, let's hear that sound effect for Dan. The serious Dan Bublitz. Nah, he's always funny. Comedian Dan Bublitz is coming up next on the Dave Holly Hour.
Hey, I'm Zach Tresh, and I love Books and Brews Pizza. So does my friend Dave. In fact, the latest pizza on the Books and Brews Pizzeria menu is called The Podcaster, inspired by Dave. Now you have a chance to win pizza with a podcaster. Go to DaveHollyHour.com. Go to the contact page and send an email. Put pizza with a podcaster in the subject line. Then in the comments, tell them what your favorite episode was, or maybe even who your favorite guest has been. You could even say, Zach Dresch, since I've been on a couple of times. Then the first show each month, Dave will draw a winner for pizza with a podcaster. Yeah, that means Dave will be there with you and maybe even your favorite guest, like Zach Dresch. Enter as often as you like. Remember, DaveHollyHour.com, contact, email, pizza with a podcaster in the subject line, and show faves in the message. After all, Books and Brews is the original Dave's fave. Pizza with a podcaster, brought to you by Books and Brews Pizzeria, downtown Sioux Falls.
People ask him where he got his top shelf voice. Dime store. Bargain bin. Once again, Here is Dave Holley.
Welcome to the Dave Holley Hour for yet another week, and it's such a pleasure. I know we typically like to get people as things are coming up. We're going to hit one kind of in the middle. This gentleman has been with us before, and he's a fun guy, which is a good thing since he is a comedian.
Not a fungus.
No, yeah, a fun guy. Don't use that old dad joke.
Well, but, I'm coming into for mission of being, you know, the dad type.
Yeah.
Don't have the kids, but well, it's there.
Yeah, well, the dad bod thing, trust me. I never had kids, and I got one.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do have grandkids. It's great. Missed that whole diaper thing? Yeah, didn't have to worry.
Wait a minute. How does that work? You go from, I didn't have kids, but I have grandkids.
Yes. Marriage numero two.
Okay.
That I inherited two grown daughters.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
That worked out well.
That's the way it certainly did.
All right. Dan Bublitz Jr., great to have you. We're recording this on a Sunday. We are down here at one of my favorite haunts, Wood Grain, because it has this nice little lobby area that gives us a great opportunity to sit down and have a good conversation. And like you're doing, have yourself a beer at the same time.
That's right.
That works out well. But what I meant by the fact that we're in between things is because last night, you and Zach Gresh did a wonderful show, a clean comedy show out at Boss's.
Yep.
And the reason I say in between is because this is leading up to something bigger for you, isn't it?
That's correct.
All right. So let's tell people, I know that I have listened in the past to a thing called Dry Bar, and that's what you're really hoping to get to, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. I have the taping is scheduled for October 16th. And of course, with COVID, that could change. I mean, it already changed once. It was originally scheduled for the beginning of April, and that's kind of when,
boom
with COVID and the pandemic, and things started slowly. It was all kind of, at that point, it was, play it by ear. So everything was real touch and go. Like, everything would get canceled at the last minute. It's like, should we do it? Maybe we shouldn't. Should we do it? Maybe we shouldn't do it. And then, you get closer to the thing, and then, gone.
It became a struggle for everybody, regardless.
It absolutely did. Yeah, that was like for me personally, as a stand-up comic, that was one of the more disheartening things, was that a lot of the shows that I had booked, I mean, ultimately they got canceled, but it wasn't like it just like, oh, we gotta shut everything down, everything's canceled at once, you deal with it all in one time. It was, well, we're going to play it by ear and see how things are going. So it wasn't like, it was slowly, gradually. So like you'd have a gig get canceled. All right, we understand. We got to stay healthy. Get it. A couple weeks down the road, I got some stuff planned. There's some shows. We had some hope. Gives us hope that there's going to be an end to this. Nope, canceled. Finally, they all just gone.
and you now live in the state of Minnesota, which canceled greatly.
Yes.
Comparatively to the other Midwestern states. And
yes.
So for you, it became not just I'm losing gigs, but the lifestyle for everybody in metropolitan areas had to be really strange.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm sure that affected a lot of people. Personally, it didn't really affect me because I'm not really outside of going out to do comedy. And, sometimes I'll do some open mics during the week in the cities. But if I'm not doing stand up, I don't really go out. I'm comfortable at home, I'm doing stuff at home. I just redid my deck. I like hanging out with my dogs. My fiance is wonderful, so I don't have any reasons to be running around town.
There you go. So when it comes to Dry Bar, you say the taping is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a taping for it to be part of Dry Bar, or is it an audition type?
No,
taping?
It is. So I've already.
You've already.
This is it. So this is the taping. So what I do when I'm out there in Provo, because that's where they tape, but they do the filming. They have like their own comedy club / studio where they, it's all set up to do the recordings and the tapings. So I go out there. We do two shows. We do an early show and a late show. They do it all in one day. And then they take that and turn it into the special. And then from the special, they'll cut it down into clips for promo for social media and things of that nature.
All right. So with the two shows, are they combining them and do the editing? So you're going to have to be wearing the same outfit? And
yes. I'm sure, yeah, you do have to wear the same outfit. But I suppose it depends on how well, like, if one show is really good, they might just use that one show,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it turned out. But I think it's good to have that extra fluff just in case. So
right.
if something, you know, doesn't hit on the first show, but then on the second show, that same joke hits really well. Well, then they can,
they're going to go for the big laugh.
For the big laugh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
That makes sense. Are you able to invite anybody out to that?
Or I mean, it's open to the public.
It is, okay.
Yeah, I mean, people that are in Provo, you know, they do it in front of a live audience typically, and the shows sell out. You know, they've got their, since COVID, you know, they had to postpone a bunch of their, they basically, when I was originally going to film in April, they were working on season 6, I think. And then they got shut down due to COVID. And so they basically just canceled season 6. So now they're filming season 7. And they've got their first show coming up September 25th and 26th, which is this coming weekend, mm-hmm. next weekend. And they've already sold out. It was sold out probably a
That's
couple
great.
Days ago. So,
going in that you are going to have a good house
yeah,
then.
Yep.
Right. And not only that, but we should probably explain to people that haven't heard of Dry Bar mm-hmm. before what it is and the fact that that audience that will go to that is already knowing that part going in, too.
Yep. Yep. That's, yeah, that's why it's called Dry Bar. There's no bar.
It's yeah. but it's also clean comedy is mm-hmm. what it is. Yeah.
Yep.
And what attracted you to that and made you go, yeah, you know what, I'd really like to do this?
Well, for one, I mean, as a comic, you know, it's hard, especially when you're independent. You know, a lot of people don't realize that not all comedians have a team of managers
right.
and agents that are getting them gigs. You're working independently, you're working the road, you got to try to get in with comedy clubs and book your own thing. Well, the thing with, you know, if you can get in on, like Dry Bar, all of their clips get millions and millions and millions of views. I mean, it is a good way to get exposure and really helps launch you, not necessarily launch your career and, you know, turns you into a household name, but it definitely puts you out in front of people so you can build a fan base. And I know quite a few comedians that have done Dry Bar specials that they've been able to go do more stuff in the corporate world, you know,
okay.
doing comedy for corporate
right.
gigs for companies, you know, for their holiday parties or their, you know, team meetings and things like that. So,
instead of doing a holiday party for somebody that, you know, the maybe it's three brothers.
Yeah.
you know,
yeah.
they have 10 employees. You might be doing it for 3M.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understand.
Yep.
Yeah. So a great marketing bit as well. And because no matter what, even if it's still people that are expecting to have you at a typical comedy club where the language is much looser, obviously, if you've been able to have that and make it part of a press packet and so forth,
mm-hmm.
that's going to land you some bigger stuff too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's like having a credit. You know, it's like having a TV credit, essentially, or Comedy Central credit, that same thing. I mean, most people, you know, in the industry know what Dry Bar is,
mm-hmm.
you know? So if you have that, if you go, you know, and you submit to a comedy club and you can say, hey, I got a Dry Bar comedy special, they're going to be like, okay, maybe we need to look a little closer.
Right.
You know, because comedy clubs get so many submissions from comedians trying to get on to MC or feature or headline. And, you know, they get so many, they definitely don't have time to go through and watch every submission, you know, and they probably just kind of skim them. And that's going to be something that's going to stand out to where, oh, hey, they got a Dry Bar. Let's maybe look at this person. Because it kind of legitimizes the comedian, you know, it makes it so they're not just some open micer trying to get in at a comedy club. They've actually, you know, they've been in the business for a while.
Some establishment.
They're trying to be professional.
Yeah. And also it gives you that, you know, great bit when somebody does an intro for you.
Yeah.
Fresh off of his Dry Bar special.
Yep.
What's the intro like now when other people do introduce you? I mean, it's around here when we've gone to see you. It's basically, you know, we all know you. And it's kind of like, hey, here's Dan. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Like, I honestly, when people ask me what I want them to say to introduce me, a lot of times I'm not, I don't really, I mean, I just do the basics, you know, like sometimes I'll like, hey, you know, Amazon Prime, you know, one man show, podcast, you know, the art of bombing, mm-hmm. whatever, that kind of thing. Just real minute stuff, because it's at the same time, I feel like they don't know me. They didn't come to the show to see me. You know, they just come to a comedy club for, in fact, they probably didn't even come specifically for the headliner. You know, they just came to the comedy right. club because they wanted to see a comedy show and laugh. So it's like the credits in the intro, it doesn't really matter. The only thing the audience cares about is whether or not. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are they going to make me laugh? You know?
So, all right.
I mean, because honestly, a lot of times, a lot of intros, they're fake credits.
Yeah. That's
a lot of times
true.
They make them up. They're just like, yeah, I've been on late night TV. You know, you could have seen him on Letterman and blah, 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 blah. And none of the credits are
right.
real.
When in reality, they were on channel 322 at 2 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it, too.
All right. So you've had some practice runs at this show then.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a parameter on it in terms of how many minutes it has to be, and do they give you a little leeway on that? What's the situation?
So the situation is that we get 20 to 25 minutes.
So okay, that's so 20 to 25.
20 to 25
right.
is the leeway. And so that's what I've been, my biggest thing right now is I've got the set list that I want to do. I have the jokes that I want to do. I have it in the order that I want to do, so it'll flow good. Because I also, when I was putting together what I wanted to do for the taping, I wanted to keep in mind, you know, how are they going to break this down to make their promo clips? So I want, you know, a lot of times their promo clips can be anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because they do these chunks. And so I want to make sure that my flow is good so they can say, they can take a good chunk from the same kind of, you know, not necessarily the same bit, but are the same joke, but, you know, jokes that are kind of flowing together. So there's a little bit of that synergy. So I think mm-hmm. about that consciously in my mind. So I got that put together, and then it turned out, you know, I ran it, and I had like 33 minutes. So I had to cut some stuff. So then I listened back, and I cut some stuff. And then, you know, we did it last night again, and last night I was still long. It was at 28 minutes. So
okay.
I still have to do some cutting.
Yeah.
But I'd rather have to cut than not have enough
right.
time. Yeah, because then you're like, you really have to struggle, and then it, you know, you just put fluff in, and then it's not going to be any good.
Okay, so 3 minutes has to come out at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a 3-minute bit that you think you're going to take out, or do you think you're going to be a little quicker in some other ones? How do you
work
the 3 minutes?
Well, I think
it's
going to be a combination. I've already been thinking about this. That's what I was kind of doing today. Already thinking back on how I'm going to cut it. And there's a couple bits. I do a thing about true crime. And one of the stories that I do with that is, it's kind of long. It's a story. And I really, there's a lot of pausing and drawing it out so that the punch at the end really gets that big laugh. And I think I'm either going to take the true crime stuff out altogether, or I'm going to try to condense that one joke and speed it up, get to the punchline faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's some other stuff I do about working and, you know, having different jobs and stuff that I might take out too, you know. So I've definitely got some ideas on how I'm going to do it. And another thing that I'm going to do, which is nice, is having other comedians and friends that, you know, do comedy, and they kind of have an idea and they can help. So I'm going to cut it down to what I have now, and a couple of my friends are going to watch it too, and they're going to, you know, give me some ideas of what they think I should cut out of it.
Yeah, and you had mentioned that you do have some people that you know that have been on Tri-Bar. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be part of that reviewing crew as well?
One of them.
Yeah.
Yep, one of them. Yeah. His Tri-Bar actually hasn't released, but he filmed his back in January. So he filmed his, like, right before everything.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Are there any COVID jokes in this one?
The only thing I did write a new joke about, and it's just a little bit, and it isn't really about COVID, it's just about wearing masks.
Okay.
And it's more of a transition into a joke about Halloween, mm-hmm. which is, you know, goes into aging and being bald.
Well, and that was a loaded question for me because I saw your show last. In fact, I saw you twice this week because you were at open mic on Wednesday night.
Yep.
And then you had the show last night, and fantastic as always.
Thank you.
I think that the thing that I've seen in your maturity as an act has been A, the professionalism, but to also just to be your comfort level of understanding there's so much more than just writing a bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I see it in your body language, your facial gestures, the whole works now.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I've really been working on. And I, you know, I was in Sioux City on Friday and did the show, and Skylar Bulks, who was on this on here not too long ago, another comedian in Sioux Falls, he on the way back, he brought that up too. He was like, I don't know what it was tonight. He said, I know I haven't seen you in a while perform, but that was like one of the best performances I've ever seen. And he said, it wasn't just your material, because I've seen a lot of your material. Mm-hmm. It was your timing, your delivery, your body movement. You were like really in the zone. And that's, you know, something I'm trying to get better at.
Well, see, if people aren't that interested in comedy, well, first of all, shame on you. But second of all, right now, if they're listening going, wow, there's more to this comedy thing than just being funny, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's so many little things you don't think about,
right?
Like holding the microphone, you know, and you know where to hold it, and projecting, and knowing when to move the microphone. You know, if you're going to get loud, because you know if you're holding the microphone right up to your face and you just like scream for a punchline or whatever, you're going to distort the speakers and people are going to cringe rather than laugh, because they're gonna be like
All right, so overall the feeling of the 28 minutes that you now need to get down to 25.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How was it last night?
I felt like it was pretty good.
I did too. I mean as an observer,
I felt real good about it. I like the order that I have it in. I like how it flows, and I really feel good about my closer. And so it's just a matter of fine-tuning and getting it down to that 25 minutes. But
so,
I think it's good.
How many times will you go through this now, rehearsing either A, at home, or doing some more of this leading up to it?
Well, as much as I can. Yeah. I mean, that's the short answer, as much as I can. I mean, with everything going on with the, you know, we're still in a pandemic. I mean, COVID is still here. I know people are getting a little, you know, stir crazy, and they're doing more things, and places that were doing a real good job at being shut down or opened up and not necessarily doing such a great job anymore, that kind of thing. So there's still not a lot of opportunities. Things are still opening up slow. So, but I do have a few gigs booked. I have some virtual gigs booked too. And so that's another thing. I'll get some practice there. Won't be the same, because it's not the same as performing on stage. You know, you can't get all the same body language and movement into performing in front of a computer, you know, but it's still practice. And so, yeah, so I've got that coming up, too. So
how many virtual shows did you do during
this?
Yeah.
I did a handful, I guess. I mean, I did a couple little virtual open mics, and then I did some actual shows. You know, I did like 3 or 4 actual shows, and then plus I did my own show. It was more of a storytelling show than stand up that I had hosted, and I had people on and stuff like that. And I did that for like a month and a half, something like that.
Did you spend a lot of time writing new material?
I tried to. So what I did, because it's hard to write new material if you're not experiencing new things, if that makes
sense. Right,
out experiencing things, you can only, you know, there's only so much that's going to happen at your house, you know. But what I tried to do, and I even ended up turning it into its own little project and kind of a side, like an extension of my podcast, is I was trying to renew old bits that I either didn't work when I tried them and I didn't put a lot of effort into, you know, trying to make it a good bit, or I just don't use the bits anymore. So I was kind of mining through old material and rewriting it.
All right. Question that I need to ask, because I took a step the other night and did the open mic, and I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see what caught, what didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a bit, because the other thing is you can do that same act another night get a completely different reaction. Mm-hmm. So at what point do you go, bit's got to come out? I mean, do you go like 1, 2, 3 strikes, it's out, or?
It varies for me. Like, I mean, it's hard for me to like really have an answer, because sometimes it's not necessarily that I take it out intentionally. It's that I realize subconsciously it's not working, and I just kind of forget about the bit altogether. You know what I mean? So it's like I don't try, yeah, because I'm okay. Just like, that didn't work. And then it just like disappears from my brain.
Not like a marking system.
Hey, yeah.
No, you got an A plus one night and an F the next.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, after a few times, but it also depends on where you do it. You know, like, because if you go to an open mic, and a lot of open mics, you know, in Sioux Falls, they're great because it's a smaller community, and a lot of the open mics, there's people, not just comics, there's actually audience. So it's easier to gauge whether or not the bit's doing good because it's in front of strangers. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you go into a bigger city like Minneapolis, St. Paul, the metro areas, they've got great comedy scenes, but a lot of their open mics don't draw audiences because they have great comedy clubs and great comedians. And so they're going to those shows on the weekends. They're not going out during the middle of the week to see 30 comics do 3 minutes, you know, trying new material, you know. So there's a handful of open mics that draw a good audience, and they're harder to get on too. But so if you do a joke and it's just a room full of comics, you're not going to get a good gauge on how well mm-hmm. the joke is, because a lot of times the other comics aren't paying attention. And it's not because they're being rude, but a lot of times it's because they got their heads down in their phones or notebooks thinking about what they're doing. You know, they're going through their set list, and they're doing their last minute, oh, this is an idea, I should try this tonight, that kind of thing, you know. So they're not paying attention to what's going on. So you can't really get a good gauge unless you have a good audience. So.
But when you drop a bit out of a set, it has to be a little disheartening, doesn't it? Because, you know, you put time into it to develop it.
When I first...
You
get past that. I was going to say, when I first started comedy, yeah, it was harder to let things go. Because also that meant if you let something go, you needed to replace it. Because, if you're doing, like, say you're hosting, most times hosting, you know, at a gig or like a comedy club, you need to do 5 to 10 minutes. Usually more times than not, it's 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you only have 10 minutes and 3 minutes isn't working, and you're like, well, I got to drop this. Well, now you need another new 3 minutes that's going to work, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really harder to let things go when you first start. But then after you've been in the game, you know, I just celebrated 10 years of doing stand-up.
Well, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And, so I've got tons of material. I'm always thinking about things and ideas and trying different things and seeing, you know, what works and what doesn't. And if something doesn't work, it's not that big of a deal because I already have jokes that are proven, you know. So I have a good 25-minute set that I can do. And then if I have to go do more time, I still got more material. I mean, a good example was last night. You know, I did the ended up being the 28 minutes, but I did that run through. And then I did another 20 minutes of mm-hmm. other stuff that wasn't even included in that, you know. As you do it longer, it's a lot easier to let things go.
When you get ready to do a clean comedy show like you did last night, is it just rewriting what you already have?
I mean, to some extent.
Drop some of the language, or?
Some of it is dropping language. Some of it, I mean, it's be clean and clever. That's one of the things that I really kind of helps me with my writing. You know, I have that clean and clever. And I got that when I was in San Diego. There was a production company that was called Brouhaha, and then they changed to Comedy Heights. And their big thing was they did a lot of shows in like little restaurants and coffee shops and cafes, like where anybody could be in there at any time, because they were like a lot of times free shows and they would do tips. And so they really emphasized being clean. But that didn't mean you couldn't be a little edgy and do adult humor. It was be clever about it. Use the innuendos, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Replace it, you know, if you have a bad word, that you, and you really need that bad word for the joke, find a word that means the same thing. And one thing I found, often, more times than not, the other word that you find to replace the swear is funnier because it just sounds funnier.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're, you know, I don't know how, what your material content is on here.
But, oh, feel free.
Okay. But, you know, instead of like if you have a joke and you're talking about a dick, you can say ding dong.
Yeah.
And that's
tellywhacker.
Yeah, exactly. And it just sounds, it sounds funnier because it's a funnier word too. Well, so that's one of the things I've, you know, kind of picked up on because of them. You know, so I'm really grateful for that because they really helped hone, they really help hone comedians and push them to do that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of funny words and so forth and different meanings, one of the first jokes I ever heard was from my, it wasn't even a joke. He just, somebody said the word and then he repeated it and gave his definition of it was innuendo. He says, yes, that's Italian for suppository.
That's so good.
Yeah, and he was a big influence in my life, and that kind of brings us to where we want to go next. You know, what are the influences now that you have a decade of comedy under the belt?
I mean, there's always other stand-up comics are always kind of influential. I mean, as far as, especially if, you know, you're in a scene. Granted, I don't live in Sioux Falls anymore, but when you see other comics that are, you know, that you kind of pal around with and they're doing really good, it really inspires you to be try to match that. And not in a competitive way, but more of a like, oh man, you know, he's doing really good. I need to step up my game, you know, and work a little harder, you know, to run with this crew, you know? So it's a lot of that now, you know? I mean, I still watch some stand up once in a while, but because I'm out so much doing stand-up and I see so much of it live, I honestly don't watch a lot of it at home. I'm like, I'm at home. I don't want to care about stand-up right now.
Like the person that works at a restaurant, I'm not cooking tonight.
Exactly. That is exactly how I feel about it.
What inspires you about comedy?
Making people laugh. I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do. It I mean, you can... It's one of the hardest things you can do. And there's something magical when you can say like a quick line and make a room full of strangers laugh. You know, that's a powerful thing to do. And I don't know, it's very intoxicating. I mean, a lot of people have described doing stand up, you know, and that feeling and that adrenaline you get from doing it is intoxicating and almost addictive. You know, it's almost like its own kind of drug.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine that did stand-up comedy in Sioux Falls for many years and around the area, when I posted the other night that, you know, I could knock one off the bucket list that I had done an open mic, his response on Facebook was, uh-oh, now you're hooked. And you will need more of it.
And he was absolutely right.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, because I'm already thinking, okay, you know, I didn't use it, but I got to use it. What about when you perform? Do you come off the stage at the end of the night and you think back and go, oh, crap, I forgot this. I didn't hit this hard enough.
Oh, I immediately think that. Like, I'm thinking about that a lot of times while I'm on stage, too. Like,
yeah.
If a joke didn't hit, I'm like, that didn't go very well. Will this joke work? If they didn't get that, you know, if that didn't work, will this not work?
Oh, yeah. A self-editing process.
Well,
because
you know, I've had shows where I've did some jokes that the audience just wasn't in. And I was like, well, if they're not going to laugh at this, they're definitely not going to laugh at this because it's a little edgier and along the same kind of lines. Like, this was mild and they did not like it. They're definitely not going to like this because it's a little stronger, you know? So then you have to change kind of where you go with the rest of your jokes to try to, you know, because the end of the day, the goal of being a comedian and doing a show is making the audience laugh. That is your goal, you know. And an example of this is, and I don't do a lot of political humor. I don't do, you know, social justice comedy and commentary, you know, that's not really my thing. But I did try something on an open mic at Bosses on Wednesday that was more on the kind of the social justice warrior preachy kind of thing, and it got no laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, not doing this again. But then I ended up turning it around, and I got a laugh out of it. In fact, I got a laugh out of it not working. Because then I called the audience out. I was like, oh, you guys didn't laugh at that. You are bad. Or you didn't cheer or applaud for that. You guys are bad people. You know, that kind of thing. So I like turned it around on them and ended up getting a good laugh. But then the next day, you saw me at that open mic.
Right.
I did not do that bit. I was like, all right, that's a one and done.
Yeah.
That is a one and done. I was like, nope. And there are comics that can do that kind of comedy, and they're good at it, and they're good at making it funny and still thought-provoking. Not necessarily me.
What is your approach when it comes to writing?
It depends. I mean, I just kind of try to be as observant of things as I can and think about things. I try to draw from my life. I really, really try to like get the brain thinking about memories and like things from my childhood and just like, trying to mine material just from all the experiences. I mean, I have a joke about living in a trailer park. And a new thing that I've added to that was, I lived in a fancy one. I lived in one of those mobile home resorts. And that was just something we were on our way back from a vacation in Montana. And there's all kinds of like camper, camping resorts and mobile home resorts. And I kept seeing, blah, blah, blah's mobile home resort. And you like look over there and it's just trailers that you see at every trailer park. And it just was funny to me. I was like, oh, that's like a fancy way of saying trailer park, And so I was able to incorporate it into the joke, and it's really funny. So there's things like that, I try to look for stuff like that.
When it comes to one that hasn't worked in the past, do you try to rewrite it?
Sometimes. I mean, that's another thing, that you can do as a writer is like when you first start stand-up, you're trying all kinds of stuff, and there's probably stuff that's not working. And a lot of times, it might just be the joke is never going to work and you just got to surrender it and let it go. But it also has to do with your skill level. There's jokes that I probably wrote when I first started that are terrible. But if I went and took it now, and there are some jokes that, I was going through old material. There are jokes that I was like, oh, that sucked then. And then I'm like, oh, but what if I do this and that? Because now I'm thinking more like a stand-up comic and I've got a different way of thinking about, the subject material or so I'm able to do something different with it now and maybe make it funnier.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned about your childhood and so forth, and obviously you draw on a lot of things that are true. It used to be that people would say truth is stranger than fiction, but now do we say truth is funnier than fiction?
Maybe.
Yeah.
There's some funny things it's just amazing how many things, and you don't realize it at the time either. That's the
right.
best part.
Now,
it's like looking back on it, you're like, wait a minute, that's hilarious. I mean, at the time, it was awful. It was an awful experience.
Right, embarrassing
or sad or whatever the situation is. But now you like look back and you're like, but it was kind of fun. I can admit it now. I'm not so sore about it.
There's a good old word, sore.
I'm not sore about it.
He's
anymore.
Really sore about that. All right. Well, every town in America, in fact, probably every neighborhood, has that one person that can rattle off jokes and jokes and jokes and jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you have to go from that point, from somebody that's just heard a joke and they tell it again and they tell it funnier than the next person? To making bits.
Well, I mean, there's one thing to tell somebody else's joke. When I'm making bits, I'm making it's material that is my material. People can tell a street joke and then tell somebody else, and then that person does make it funnier because maybe they add some body movement and, a little bit of delivery or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's never going to be theirs. Somebody else wrote that material. And like when it comes to like doing bits and, like a story joke and punching up different parts of it, it's more personal because it's your story and it's your joke. So you can put more passion into it.
Yeah. All right. Your 10 years that you've been doing it now, what's been the most fun?
Oh, the most fun, I think, is travel. It's been the traveling and meeting interesting people. You know, I have so many great friendships that have stemmed from doing stand-up comedy. Mm. Like, I've got to meet and work with people I never would have imagined. You know, like, I was married for 12 years. I started comedy way late in life. I was 32 when I finally decided to do it. And, you know, growing up in the Midwest, growing up in South Dakota, like, I've always been a fan of comedy and kind of always wanted to do it, but never did. But, like, I watched Saturday Night Live and I was a fan of Mike Myers and Dana Carvey and all these guys. And then, you know, years later, I'm doing comedy and I do a show with Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's and you know, to me, that's like so surreal. I'm like, I could have never imagined this would have happened. He's literally right here and I'm having a conversation with Dana Carvey. This is insane.
Wasn't he? I have to pinch myself after he turns around, or
yeah, exactly. That's exactly. And that's how I feel about a lot of the celebrity interactions that I've had in comedy. It's like I can't believe this is real, you know? Like, one time, and I didn't really get to interact with him, but it was still cool. I was doing a show at the Ice House in Pasadena, and I get to the club for my set, and right away the MC is like, just to let you know, Arsenio Hall is going to be dropping in. He's going on right before you. And I was like, okay, cool, all right. And then I go, how much time is he doing? He's like, however much he wants to do. And I was like, all right, fair enough. And so then I watched Arsenio Hall crush for like 45 minutes on a showcase style show. Mm-hmm. This was a show where it's, you know, you get like eight comics and they all do 8 minutes each. So it's, you know, real tight show. He comes in, does a spot in the middle where he basically, you know, does 45 minutes, crushes. And then I have to go follow that, you know, and I'm only, you know, a few years into comedy. I'm not nearly as experienced, you know. But and it's one of the things that's like, you need to be able to follow anybody. So that's a good lesson.
True.
Because you do. You need to be able to have the confidence to follow any other comic. You know, whether you do, it ends up being a good set or not, you still need to have the confidence that says, I'm supposed to be here. I can do this too. So it was a good learning experience.
You've had a lot of good learning experiences.
Oh, absolutely. But that's because that's another thing I feel like that has helped me with stand-up. I try to look at everything as a learning experience. You know, I'm always trying to get better. I'm very self-aware of, you know, my flaws and when I don't do good. And when, you know, if I do a joke and I realize, okay, this joke is pretty offensive and it's probably insensitive, I shouldn't do this joke. And then I can be like, I got to take that out. That's not, you know, I got to get better. Not just being a comedian, but being, you know, a human and thinking about feelings and, you know, all these other things that kind of go into writing a joke, you know, that you got to be conscious of.
So speaking of the experiences, I mean, you've been to festivals. Yep. And so let's kind of take it through the process of, you know, the life of a comedian that is, you know, looking to expand it, not just a little hobby thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start with an open mic.
Yep.
And then at some point you're going to host.
Yep.
Then you're going to be a feature act somewhere.
Yep.
And then a headliner.
Yep. That's
okay.
What you hope.
That's what you hope.
Yep.
And that usually is typically going to be around, you know, just little small comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So where does it go to next? Is that when you go, hey, do I have enough? Do I have something that I can present at a festival that, you know, either A, I'm going to find out how good I am,
mm-hmm.
or B, somebody's going to say, you know, you should try doing something like this, or, you know, you're going to get some great feedback to grow in the future.
Well, if you get into a festival, depending on the festival, that's the other thing. I mean, typically, yeah, you start out doing open mics, you know, and usually, and when you're doing open mics, a lot of times you'll, if you're funny enough, you'll get on little showcases like within your area, you know, that other comics are putting on, and maybe you'll even get a host, do like the 5 minute host spot or whatever. So usually after a year or two of doing open mics, you've got a pretty decent, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, and then you can start hosting. But as far as festivals go, it really depends on the festival, because certain festivals, you know, they have different parameters of what they're looking for. But, you know, there's a lot of them that they want some inexperienced comics, you know, like a good example is Snow Jam Comedy Festival here in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. We like to have a good variety. We've had comics that have only been doing comedy for a year that have made it into the festival. You know, they were, but at the same time, they got to be funny, you know, and that, you know, they got to go through, because often what happens is when you decide you want to try out for a festival, you submit a video, and a lot of times they have like a video submission fee, and that's, you know, because they have to pay for their time, and they have to have, there's expenses that are, there's overhead involved in making a festival, and so you do that, and then you might not even get in, because often what happens is a festival will have 30 spots available on their festival, they'll get hundreds of submissions. And now you have to take, well, we have to take the best of the best to put in these 30 spots. We can't just give them to anybody just because we want, you know. So then the committees or however they do their process, each festival is a little different, they break it down and pick who they want. And it's usually based on how good the jokes are and how, you know, stage presence, writing, you know, that kind of thing. So then if you get into a festival, you already know you're doing pretty good at comedy, because it's not that easy to get into festivals. I mean, I'm 10 years in and I hardly ever get into festivals. And granted, I don't submit to a lot. I mean, I'm very picky on it, but it's just because I'm at that point where I'm, you know, I'm trying to make a career out of it. Festivals don't, a lot of times, unless you're the headliner or on the festival, you're not getting paid. So it's more of a vacation and networking opportunity, mm-hmm. thing like that. And I've been doing it long enough. I've made a lot of connections. So it's like, you know.
Well, you've also been on the inside.
Yes.
And that I have. With Snow Jam.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've worked with other festivals too on the back end of things. So I kind of know the process. But then, you know, so if you get into a festival, you're already doing pretty good. I mean, chances are there was hundreds of others trying to get in and they didn't, and you did. So that's a pretty good sign that you're on the right path. But I mean, as far as what every time that takes you to the next level, I mean, a lot of times it's just being kind of watching for the opportunities and putting yourself out there. Because that's another thing. A lot of comedians are terrible at marketing. And that is a very important thing, because you are the product and you have to be able to put yourself out there. You know, you need to put yourself out there. You need to have things that show you're a professional, you know, having a website, having a business card, showing that you really want to succeed. You know, it's more than just making a good joke and being able to make people laugh, you know, to get to these next levels, you know.
What's next level for you?
For me, I mean, right now I'm a good feature act and I do headline once in a while. Like, mm-hmm. I'm right in that, like, that I'm doing a lot more feature work than anything, but then once in a while I, you know, I'll headline some shows and smaller clubs and things like that. So, like, I'm in that transition of going from feature to a headliner, essentially, but more of a road comic headliner. But then what you hope, so with the Dry Bar Comedy Special, once that comes out, which it'll be, you know, if film in October, it'll probably be anywhere from 3 to 6 months before it comes out. So it's probably not going to come out until 2021.
Oh, thank God. It's going to miss 2020.
Yeah. Probably don't want. Yeah. I'm already leery about filming it in 2020. Like, oh man, it won't get released because I bomb or something.
What about the dream comedy show that you would do?
I don't know. Just, it would be great to open, you know, for other big comedians, like to do a theater show. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point it would be great if I was famous enough that I could sell out a theater. That'd be pretty cool, you know, but realistically, I just think it would be really cool to work with a, you know, a bigger comic and be able to be their opening act and go out on the road with them doing theaters and things like that. I think that would be awesome.
In the meantime, you are the host of The Art of Bombing as well, a podcast.
That's correct.
Of which I listen to and enjoy. I understand we're going to be turning the tables today.
We are. We're going to be
awesome.
You're going to be a guest on my podcast.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
We've been waiting to do this for a while.
That we have. All right. Well, Dan, appreciate you always spending time when you're in town. Thanks for being on the Dave Holly Hour. Appreciate it. And we'll be back in just a minute.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, It's okay to treat yourself, too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
Sure, they have darts, and you've heard me talk about how ruggedly handsome the trivia host is, but All Caps Fun never stops at the Sky Lounge and Tea. And fun is best had with your friends enjoying live entertainment, as in live and local. Yeah, the Sky Lounge believes in giving you the best bands, solo artists, and comedians from the area. The Neo Johnsons, Elizabeth Hunstead, Skylar Volks, as well as many others. And a great staff will make sure you enjoy your fun at the Sky Lounge in T, South Dakota.
From the Dipsy Doodle Studios at the world headquarters of Big D Entertainment, a 40-square-foot home studio in the middle of America, it's Dave Holly.
Hey, thanks again for listening. Certainly appreciate it. Appreciate you listening, your downloads, your streaming. Also appreciate any time you like our Facebook page. Again, you'll want to go to that to see when the tickets will become available for Vaudi's Female Review, Vaudi's After Dark, coming up October 8th at 8 p.m. at Books and Brews Pizzeria over in the speakeasy part, okay? It's going to be a great time. Wonderful talent is on its way for you. Also, we're getting close, people. You know, to the year anniversary, the 10th of October is that, which means episode 51 is going to be our anniversary show. Not positive what I'm doing on that yet. That comes out on October 8th, the same day that we're going to have Vaudi's at Books and Brews. It will be fun. We'll do something. Don't know if it's just going to be a regular show, but maybe we'll throw in something a little extra as well, okay? So just keep listening for that, as well as next week will be episode number 50. And we have got some great guests lined up. SuperCon is coming back this year, just in a different form. Charlie Eccles is going to tell us all about that. Also, it's time to be taking in the symphony again. South Dakota Symphony Orchestra's David Delta Geyer, the conductor, the maestro, will be joining us. We'll also talk about something big that just happened to him. So, keep listening, keep liking, keep sharing. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and if nothing else, make sure you go to DaveHollyHour.com. The website will help you out on a lot of things as well. Appreciate it. We'll chat again next Thursday. My name is Dave Holly, and remember, for me, every day is a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudi's, and Dipsy Doodle Productions, and is produced by Big D Entertainment.
Thanks for listening.